Accession number 29054, Mr. Bin Wells, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Wells?
I was born in Leicester on the 9th of December 1924.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
I was the youngest of four children. My father, unfortunately, died when I was 7 years old from meningitis. I know during the First World War he was in the Royal Naval Air Service. I don't know exactly what he did, but he was in the Royal Naval Air Service in World War One. And, you know, I missed having a father growing up, really. My mother was left with these four children, the eldest of whom was 15, and I was, I think, 7 when my father died.
Now, what had your father done for a living? I mean, was the family well set up?
He was an audit clerk. He worked in Leicester for a firm called Deakin and Co. And actually, when I left school, my headmaster, why, I don't know, suggested I might go into accountancy, and in fact, I...
Hang on, because we will come to that.
Yeah.
Now, what effects did your father's death have on the family? Because he wasn't well off. I mean, they were comfortably off but for the time. But, I mean, how did your mother cope?
Quite honestly, I don't really know, because I was young. But she did eventually set up as a ladies' hairdresser in Leicester. And she did that until she was 60 years old. And I know she used to go on holiday to Eastbourne, and she met a Swiss gentleman there, and she eventually married him. I do remember going into her shop one day and saying to me, "You're going to have a new dad." I wasn't particularly shocked, but and I thought, well, it's bound to be good for my mother, really. And she gave up the hairdressing business and she went to live down in Goodmayes in Essex until her second husband died, and then she moved back to Leicester again.
Now,
she lived to be 103.
Was it a happy childhood, would you say? Or was it marred by your father's death?
No, I can't remember sort of going without things or anything. We used to go on holiday, if it was only a half-crown trip to Skegness on the train from Leicester North Station, which they used to run in those days. You could get to Skeggy and back for half a crown. And I can remember going on one or two of those trips. And one of the other holidays I remember quite always used to go to Scarborough, and there's a very nice park there called Peace Home Park, and I can remember they used to have these Canadian type canoes, and I used to love to go on those canoes and paddle around this park and so on. And yes, we had happy times, I must say.
Now, what about your education? Take me through that. What schools do you remember?
Well, I mean, from infant school, I then went to... I started at a school called Narborough Road School in Leicester as an infant when I was 5. I can remember there being a sandpit, and I can also remember they had a sort of parents do at Christmas, and they did this thing based on the nursery rhyme about "Hey diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon." And as I was the only boy who could jump over somebody else's back, I became the cow that jumped over the moon, and I had horns attached to my my face, and I remember that quite well. And then I went to another school called Fulver Rise, and then to another one called Braunston Hall, which is in the middle of a park in Leicester, and the school was actually in the building that used to be lived in by the Winstanley family, who were a rich landowners in Leicester. And then I went to the Gateway School, which was a grammar school, when I was 11, and I stayed there until I was 16.
That's 1940. Now, how did you do at the grammar school? I mean, were you, I mean, favourite subjects?
I loved school. My best subject at school, funny enough, was geography. I did like geography. And I used to spend a lot of time doing maps. One of the countries we dealt with in a great amount of detail was South America. And I always wanted to go to South America, but up to now I've never quite made it, you know. But I enjoyed sport at school. I was the school football captain. I became captain. It was based on houses. We had four houses: Skeffington House, Chantry House, Tudor House, and Lancaster House. And I, in my last year, became captain of Skeffington House. And we won the football trophy and the cricket trophy and the athletics trophy. And I took an active part in all of those. And in fact, they awarded me the Sportsman's Prize in the year that I left school, which was in August of 1941.
Now, any other, I mean, what about qualifications?
I got school certificate with, I think, six distinctions and a couple of credits, I think. Geography I got a distinction in, of course. And
what about other subjects you liked, or subjects you disliked as well?
I dislike music because I'm tone deaf, really. I even sound bad when I sing in the bathroom, you know, but I didn't particularly like music. I wasn't too keen on religious knowledge. I was quite good at chemistry and not bad at physics. And I excelled at sports, I suppose.
So pretty good across the whole spectrum, really.
Well, I was in the top form, the A form, you know, and It was an unusual school, the Gateway, in that it was the only school of its kind in England that was attached to the Leicester College of Art and Technology, as it was called in those days. And we spent a lot of our lessons in the Colleges of Art and Technology, and Leicester in those days was involved in the hosiery trade, the engineering trade, the boot and shoe industry. And we were given the opportunity of finding out about how shoes were made, how hosiery was made, and engineering, and also art was the other main subject they dealt with. And we had a very good art teacher named Hugh Collinson, who was an extremely good artist, and certainly in later years used to do illustrations in the local Leicester Mercury, which is a local newspaper.
Now, was there an OTC, an Officers Training Corps, when you saw that?
No, but there was an Air Training Corps.
Did that start after the war?
No, this was started during the war, and
That's what I meant. After the war. Let's go back to when the war started. You'd be about
15.
15, yeah.
I remember my mother saying, thank God you won't be old enough to go, because my elder brother, who was 4 years older than me, was in the Territorial Army and called up, you know, before the actual declaration of war, and he was at Dunkirk and managed to get out of there, and later on in the year he was in Burma with the 14th Army. He had a rough war, really, compared with what I had, I think.
So, do you remember the day itself? It's an old joke, the day war broke out.
I remember listening to Chamberlain saying, you know, that the made this statement to Hitler and wanted his undertaking that they would withdraw with Poland, and he said no such undertaking has been received, and therefore a state of war exists between this country and Germany. And I can remember that, yeah. And that's what I say. I remember mother saying, thank God you won't be old enough to go. But
how did you feel about that? I mean, did you think it would be over before, well, 3 years before you'd be old enough? Did you think it would be all
I
over?
I did think it would be over fairly quickly, yeah.
How did you feel about it? Were you disappointed, or how did you feel?
Well, for some years prior to that, I'd had this interest in flying. I remember when I was quite young seeing either the R100 or 101 flew over Leicester, and I remember looking out at the bedroom window and seeing this. And I also took an interest in flying because Sir Alan Cobham used to come round with this circus, I know they put a thing in the local paper to guess how high this aircraft was flying, and if you got it right, you got a free flight. Unfortunately, I didn't get it right, but I was interested, and I
and
had.
Why were you? What was it? Was it? What was it about it? You think that's made you interested?
Whether it was the fact that my father was in the Royal Naval Air Service or not, I don't know. But I had a little bite when I was 9, 10 years old, and I used to cycle over. There was an airfield about 8 miles from Leicester called Desford, and it was certainly an RAF training airfield during World War II. And I used to cycle over there just to see aircraft taking off and landing. And
did you go to any of the air shows? I mean, Cobham and them?
I went to one. He had one at a place called Ratcliffe, which was like a farmland where there was an airstrip, and it was owned by Sir Lindsay Everard, who was a local member of the gentry, and this Sir Alan Cobham circus went to this place, and I went to see there.
Well, what happened there? Because I mean, not many people can remember Alan Cobham's circus, you know, air circus.
Well, I can't remember a great deal about it, but there was a lot of aircraft there, you know, I was just interested, and I was interested. I knew about Amy Johnson and Jim Mollison and Alcock and Brown, and
did you take, you know, the W. Johns popular flying and think there's
no,
there's
I didn't.
None of the magazines.
No, I didn't. I used to make these paper aeroplanes, and I can still make them today, and I reckon my design is as good as any that I've ever seen. And in fact, even in those days, some lady came up to him in the street and said, "I'd like to buy your aeroplane. I'll give you sixpence for it." And I said, "No, this is my favourite. I'm not going to sell it, you know." And I still make them for my grandchildren now. And you know, it's just a design. I don't know. I don't think I made the design, but it does work, and they do fly beautifully. Just a bit of paper, and you know.
So that was all going on pre-war. Now. You weren't in the air cadets before the war started. No, you'd be too young.
No, I joined it when I was about 15, I suppose.
So round about the time the war started.
They set up an air training corps squadron, the number of which was 1434, and it was in fact made up of boys from the four grammar schools in Leicester. There was the Gateway, the Older Minutons, the City Boys, and the Wiggiston Boys School. And this squadron was made up from boys from those four schools.
So this is a 1434 air training squadron, and that was the air cadets.
Yeah, it was.
Now, you know, how did you join this?
Well, I joined. Our flight was at the Gateway School, and the French master was the officer in charge, and we used to do drill on the school roof. Actually, we used to do marching drills, and we used to they used to take us out. I remember going on a trip to Desford Aerodrome, where by that time they were training RAF pilots on Tiger Moths, and we managed to get a flight in a Tiger Moth.
Now,
and that was the first time.
Do you remember your first flight? Because people, you know, and Tiger Moths, and you know, it's a bit more interesting than an airliner now.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Well, it was a great thrill to me. You know, the fact that you're up there looking down at the ground, and the wind, of course, they're open cockpits, and the wind whistling past you, and I thought it was so exciting. I was so excited about it. And they took us on another sort of weekend trip to an airfield in Nottinghamshire called Newton. And they were training a lot of Poles there at that time. And we had an opportunity of flying in an Oxford, which was a twin engine training aircraft, and I remember me and another chap out of the ATC went on this cross-country flight with these two Poles who couldn't speak a word of English. My friend was as sick as a dog. And I remember we flew over Lincoln, because I remembered I knew Lincoln Cathedral, and I remember we flew over Lincoln, but where the rest of it was, because they never told us where we were going, and we got back to Newton all right, and we were there, as I say, for a weekend. They didn't really want us there, and we had to sleep on the floor of some married quarters, just with a blanket, and there was no entertainment for you in the evenings, and we used to finish up having sort of raids on the next house and that sort of thing, and unfortunately one of our lads climbing through a window, somebody hit him on the head with a lemonade bottle and laid him out, and there was a bit of an inquiry about that, but we managed to cover it up and said he'd fallen down the stairs or something, and they accepted our story about that. But I mean, again, I had the opportunity to do a bit of flying, and that was the best part about it from my point of view.
Now, what sort of training did you get with the ATC? You know, when you were back at the Gateway School, you know, you mentioned drill. How much drill were you doing? Or was it just very...
Well, we used to go on... they got to the stage when they had these parades around the town, and they had... the ATC took part, and the Sea Cadets and the various other military and Air Force units used to come when they were raising money for the war effort and this sort of thing. We used to take part in that. We did a bit of basic Morse code, as far as I remember. And
now, how far did you get with that?
I took to it quite well, actually. Which I'll tell you about a bit later, and I think we did a bit of basic navigation and aircraft recognition, of course. You knew about the Heinkel 112 and the Dorniers and all these sort of things, and you got quite good at that, and that's about as... we also had a good... football team again, and I remember I played for the Leicester wing of the ATC, because I don't know whether you know, but the number one founder squadron is based in Leicester, and they're very proud of that, because that was the first ever ATC squadron, and it was based in Leicester. And I remember during the summer holidays they had again these fundraising things, and the Leicester wing of the ATC played on Leicester City football ground at Filbert Street, and we played, of all people, the City Police, and of course there was quite a good crowd there, and we were all 16, 17, and the police, great, and of course the crowd were all yelling for the ATC, and we did in fact beat the police, and we had a very good chap, centre-half, chap named Norman Plummer, who as a result of that match was actually signed on as a professional by Leicester City, and he did, after the war, become captain of Leicester City. And that was another part of being in the ATC, I suppose. I used to play on the left wing in those days because I could run a bit, and as I say, this match against the police was quite exciting, really, with all the crowd behind us.
Now what other effects? What about air raid precautions? What air raid precautions were? I mean, did you have any type of shelter in your house or school or, air raid shelter?
We didn't have a shelter in our house, no. We were only about 200 yards from a girls' school called Newark Girls, and they had air raid shelters, and we used to go there.
Now, what are these sort of communal shelters like? Because people know about the Anderson, but they're not quite so familiar with the communal ones.
They weren't very deep underground, but there was a certain amount of soil on the top, and there were sort of fairly wide passages, probably about 5-6 feet wide, with wooden seats down the side, and people used to go in there, and they used to have there was no heating or anything, but people used to take flower pots, and they used to light a candle under these flower pots, which of course heated the pot, flower pot, and it gave off heat, and old people used to take gramophones down there and this sort of thing. And I also remember in my last year at school, they used to send some of the senior boys out to the junior schools just to give support to the teachers in case there was an air raid. I remember going to one of the junior schools and just being there, basically. We used to talk to the young children because they were only about 5 or 6, and I was then sort of 16, that sort of age. And
what were you meant to do? I mean, acting as support, but in what way? I mean, just help get them into the air raid?
Well, yes, that was basically just to give help if an air raid came on, you know. And there was never one whilst I was at the junior school, but we did have daylight raid on Leicester and one or two night attacks as well.
Now, what do you remember of the air raids? How bad were they? I mean, what was the target in Leicester, or was it not particularly targeted?
Well, of course, we're only about, as the crow flies, about 20 miles from Coventry in Leicester, and as you know, that was a big area where aircraft production was centred, and they reckon that the night raid we had on Leicester, which was the target was mainly around the Highfields area, which is near the city centre, and they also hit a very large warehouse office block of Freeman, Hardy and Willis, the shoe manufacturers, and actually, I was in the pictures when the bombs started falling, and because I used to go to the pictures a lot in those days, and or the cinema as they call it. But I was in there, and the sirens started, and they cleared the cinema, and I always remember some old girl walking up the aisle saying, "Damn and blast old Italy," you know, because she was enjoying the film, I think. But I went home, and we sometimes used to get under the stairs at the house we lived in. There wasn't a lot of room. There was a brick thrall, and then we had I had a billiard table, and we used to put that on top of the other table and get under there as well, you know. And I remember we used to try and make butter with milk. We used to shake the butter and the milk until it became butter, and we used to do it for 5 minutes and pass it on to the next member of the family, and you finished up with a bit of butter about an inch round by the time you'd done it for about 3 hours, you know. And that's
no bombs near you particularly?
Well, there were dropped on Leicester, yes. None terribly close. The nearest one was about a quarter of a mile away, I suppose. They dropped a stick of bombs, which hit a local bakery, and then it hit the stand of the city football ground, and then another one hit the stand of the Leicester Tiger rugby football ground, and another one, I can't remember where the other one, but there was a whole stick of them came across. But the main area where most people were killed was in the Highfields area of Leicester, which is quite near the railway station, actually, at the back of there. And that's where the main deaths and destruction took place in Leicester.
Now, what about the effects of rationing, food and clothing? How did that affect your life much?
Well, we never seemed to be without food. I mean, in those days, you had things like bread and lard, which And there was always plenty of potatoes, and we always seemed to get meat. I know my mother used to go and queue, that the word went round that they got fish at the fishmongers, and she'd go round and get us some fish, you know. And you could still get fish and chips in those days as well. because I remember before I went away to the war, I used to go fire watching at the office where I worked. I by this time left school and was working as a junior audit.
Hang on, we'll stick to the food rush. I'll come back to those.
Yeah.
So the food rationing didn't particularly bother you. What about clothing rationing?
Well, again, you had coupons, but I got my school uniform until I was 16 and a half when I left school. And I think I when I went to work for this firm of accounts, I had a suit, I'm sure.
Well, tell me how you... Let's move on to how you came... We'll come to the fire watching after.
Yeah.
How did you come to work for this? Tell me, what were you going to do when you left school at 16 now?
To be quite honest, I had no idea, really. I'd still got this desire to fly. I went and saw my headmaster, who was a very nice chap, and he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I honestly don't know. I don't know. I mean, you didn't have any instruction about the various things that were open to you, although, as I say, at school I tried hosiery, boot and shoe, metalwork, engineering, and none of those particularly interested me. And my headmaster did suggest I should try accountancy, and I had a number of interviews, as I say, including the firm where my father worked. But they would have taken me on just like that, but I was a bit independent. I suppose it's the fact that I'd grown up without a father, really, and I had another interview with a firm in the Town Hall Square in Leicester who had offered me 17 and 6 a week, I think, to start with. And I then had this other interview at a firm called Hops and Bankart. And he gave me a list of figures to add up, which I think I might have got right, I don't know. But they offered me a job at £1 a week. And I thought, well... I'm going to take that, because 17 and 6 and pounds, half a crown was a lot of money in those days. And I always remember taking my first wage and handing it over to my mother and saying, oh, Mum, this will help. And
now, what were
she
you?
She gave me half a crown back to spend, you know.
What were you, an accountant's clerk, or were you a trainee accountant?
I was just a junior audit clerk. I used to go out and... but the idea was that I would train to become a qualified accountant. But I was I started there at the end of August 1941. And 16 months later, I was in the Navy. Fleet Arm.
Now, how were what was it like? How did you enjoy the work as a junior audit clerk?
I enjoyed it a lot, really, because there were a lot of young people of my own age there. It was a fairly big firm. We had some very good big audits in Leicester, and we also had another office in Loughborough and another one in Northampton. And I enjoyed it because, as I say, I was working a lot with people of my own age, and we had a lot of fun going out to these various clients' premises and this sort of thing. Although we did do some of the work in the office, I did enjoy it. But as I say, I was still interested in getting in the services, really.
Now, what about the fire watching? Tell me about that.
A friend of mine, who actually was the best man at our wedding, he worked also for a firm of accountants just across the road from the office I worked at. And we used to arrange to fire watch on the same night, and we used to... do it in the office of an architect who had gone off to the war, and there was a big coal fire there, and we used to get a couple of friends of ours to come in when we were fire watching, and we used to play solo whist till about 2 in the morning and we used to go out and get a bag of chips and this sort of thing. And they used to leave about 2 in the morning, cycle off home, and we stayed the night until about 7 in the morning, when you'd go home, have a bit
now
of breakfast, come back to
us. Was this the ARP organising, or what? Or was it the firms? Or?
Well, no, the firms organised it. I remember in the week, if you did it, you got a shilling. If you did it at the weekend, you got 1 and 6, you see. So we used to, and the married men on the staff didn't want to go in fire watching at the weekend, and as long as there was somebody there, I used to say, well, I'll do it for you, like, for the 1 and 6, and they said, all right, you do my stint, and I'll, and I used to get the 1 and 6, you see, which, as I say, you know, it was only about 4 months to go to the pitches in those days, so, you know, and you got a bit of spending money as well, so.
Now, did you have any training or equipment when you were fire watching?
You had stirrup pumps, and you were given a certain amount of training about how to operate a fire, a stirrup pump and so on, but you were basically there to put out fires if fires did occur. You know, you weren't given steel helmets or anything like that. You were just on the premises, fire watching, basically.